episode of Her Healthful. I'm Araste, your host, and we had a little bit of a break last week because I didn't record, obviously, while I was in Miami, but we're back and finishing off the attachment series, which I thought was such a fun little theme for the month of February, obviously with it being Valentine's month. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed it too. I think it was way easier for me to spread things out and actually get into the nitty-gritty of each by dedicating a whole episode, or else you would have a two-hour episode, maybe even longer, which I don't know, maybe some people do like that, but I think it's just nice to be able to listen to the one that you wanted to listen to, and maybe one of them didn't resonate with you. So let me know what you thought of this format. I might be doing more series in the future, just depending on your interest and if it makes sense. So before getting into the last episode of the series, let's do some life updates and catch up a bit. I don't have that much in terms of life updates. Literally, the only thing is that I went on a trip. I went to Miami for vacation, and it was literally so nice to just get somewhere warm in the middle of Toronto winter. Even though this has been a mild winter, it's just very dull and gray, and it's just nice to get a change of scenery. And I hadn't been to Miami since before COVID, so it had been a while, and it was just so nice to go back. And I basically went to the beach every single day and had lots of yummy food. It was a very wholesome trip. Didn't even go out once, like, just wasn't the vibe. Even though people go to Miami to party, I feel like you can also go and have the best wellness, wholesome mini retreat for yourself. So that was the vibe. And we were also there for Valentine's, which was a nice little overlap. So it was basically a Valentine's week for us. We just like had dinner dates every night. And I also met up with two content creator friends, which is always such a nice perk of social media. It's like one of my favorite things is meeting up with people who I've connected with, whether that is another creator or a regular follower who maybe saw me at a cafe and came to say hi. Whatever it is, it's just like one of the coolest parts of the internet in general, even though there are boundaries and limits. But yeah, I met up with Maya Fiorella, who was also in Miami at the same time because she lives in LA and our paths just crossed. And we'd met before very briefly in LA when I was there last year, so it was nice to catch up one-on-one. And then I have my internet Sag bestie who lives in Miami, and her name is Katrina. She is simply Katipu on Instagram, so maybe you follow her. But we have been wanting to meet up for literally years because I've just like connected with her instantly. We're both Sag, and I've gotten along with every Sag I've met. Like, some of my best friends are all Sagittarius, and so we just knew we were gonna get along. And listen, it's way more appealing for me to go to Miami than for her to come to Toronto, because like the weather there is just gorgeous. And so I was like, I'm coming, I'm finally gonna be in your city, and we have to meet up. So we met up twice. One time we met up at Cafe Smood, which is the brand that she is a social media manager for, I think. I don't know what the title is, but she does all their social media stuff. So delicious there. And then we did a double date, which was so cute, and I love that we could do that. And then we just hung out. I met both of her cats, and any cat woman is literally a friend of mine. So it was just so nice to actually also have that connection in person, because sometimes you meet people online and you think you had such a great connection with them, but then you get a bit disappointed when you meet them in person and it just like wasn't the same as it was online. But this was not the case. It was literally exactly the same. And the very interesting thing about parasocial relationships is that you feel like you know the person online, and when you meet them, it's not like you're meeting for the first time because you know them. And so it's just interesting how you can get to know someone's personality, their life, have all these updates, but you've never met them in person. So yeah, it was a very wholesome trip. I'm glad I went. And realizing it's only a 3-hour flight means I definitely want to go back more. Okay, other life update, because I know I have been telling you about wanting to do a solo trip, and I had a few of you DM me after talking about how you also wanted to, and to give them recommendations if like I hear from people, because I've been asking you like where is the best destination if you've been on one, and particularly I think in Europe. So I wanted to go in May, and I have just been like toying around around with going solo or going with a friend just because I'm so fine on my own. Like, I love solo dates and I am an introvert, but it's mainly the safety aspect of it. It would just be so nice to have somebody there by my side and like still do our own things and have solo time. Like, you don't have to be glued at the hip. But if you're a woman, you know, like, it's scary to be by yourself. But I am potentially shifting the time frame to maybe instead be in September, which I know is so different and so far away from May, but few reasons. First reason is I'm already going to Europe in September because I'm going to Sicily for a yoga retreat with Wander Home, and I love Wander Home. Their retreats are insane, and so I'm already going to be doing a flight there and paying for that flight. So if I had an additional flight to go to Europe at a different time of year, it would just be saving me money if I could do the trip all together instead of doing two separate ones, especially because I'm not glued to May and I'm very, very flexible. So that's kind of my main reason. And I also think September is an amazing time to go because it's after summer. It's not high season and the weather is still beautiful. So May or September would actually be very ideal for me. It just feels like I would be rushing it if I did do something in May, and I really wanted to book it and have at least the flight and the destination chosen by the end of last month. And now February is almost done and it's just like, it feels a little rushed. So I don't want to force anything. So it's looking now like it's going to be in September, which just gives me some breathing room and way more time to plan. And who knows, maybe I'll stay there for even more than a month, like do the yoga retreat and then like bop somewhere else. Plus it gives me time to save money and just like figure out my life a bit more. So that's the update in case you are wondering at all, because I know I've been talking about it the past few episodes. I think I would still choose Barcelona just because I've been there twice and both times I've loved it. Just like something about the city is magical, and I love that there is access to beaches, but it's also like a major city, and that combination is amazing. Plus the food. Anyways, I can go down a rabbit hole, but I will keep you posted. Maybe I'll go somewhere else in May for like a week or something, just because I have a travel bug and I love going away, and I'd rather spend my money on travel than things. Obviously, I'd love both, but if I'm really picking and choosing, experiences any day. Okay, so I think that's enough rambling. We can get into the episode now. So we have two more attachment styles to go through. If you haven't listened to the last two, we already covered anxious and avoidant. So if you're interested in those, be sure to listen to them. But today we're gonna be going over disorganized attachment style and then end off on a positive note with securely attached style. And that is kind of the one we wanna aspire to. So we'll end off there. First, let's start off with disorganized attachment. And I mentioned in the previous episodes how this is kind of a combination of anxious and avoidant. And that's not 100% accurate, but I didn't want to like delve too deep in the prior episodes. But it's not wrong, it's just more nuanced than that. So let's start off with the root causes and how it comes from parenting styles as a child. So disorganized attachment usually comes from parenting that's very inconsistent. It can be abusive, frightening for the child. It's just very unpredictable, and it's really hard for a child to navigate that because they can't control how their parent acts, but also they don't know what to expect. So the parent's behavior can be quite erratic, and it can just flip-flop between being warm, responsive, loving 1 second, and then totally doing a 180 and being hostile, neglectful, going from one extreme to another. And while one of the extremes is great because it's nurturing and responsive, it still doesn't create a safe environment for the child because they know that at any moment it can go to the other side. And so it's really stepping on eggshells, self-monitoring as a child, not wanting to upset their parents and kind of be the cause of that. So it is just not a great environment for a child to grow up in, to have that much stress and unpredictability that young. It definitely ties into this attachment style and it manifesting later in life. I'm just gonna put a trigger warning here for child abuse, any of that, which I'm going to be just mentioning. Maybe skip over the next 30 seconds to a minute, but basically experiences of abuse, sexual assault, neglect, violence, those can all feed into a disorganized attachment because it sends such mixed signals to a child where the person that is supposed to be loving and caring for them contradicting that by doing these actions. So that can also feed into a disorganized attachment because the actions do not line up with how they're speaking to them. They could be the best parent in the world, but then they do something like that that completely shatters a child's world, their self-perceptions, and their perceptions of what love should look like. So how does this manifest later in life? Like, what are the symptoms? So people who are disorganized, obviously, as the name suggests, they can be quite all over the place. They might be impulsive, have self-destructive behavior, and just overall, they struggle a lot in romantic relationships. And they might actually have a lot of conflicting behaviors that stemmed from childhood. So they might want to get really close to somebody one minute and then distance themselves the next, which is very confusing for the receiving partner. But that's why I was saying it's kind of a mix of anxious and avoidant, just because these people show symptoms from both. So in terms of their self-perception and how they view themselves, I know I was mentioning how there's different beliefs about the self and about love and all of these attachment styles, but for a disorganized person, they have a very fragmented sense of self. And at the root of this style is just a lot of conflict and juxtaposition. So they may have emotions and behaviors that just don't fit with each other. They might literally be polar opposites. And so for that person, if they have so many conflicting ideas and just ways of acting, it's so confusing for them. They might question who they are, and it's just a fragmented identity in their self and relationships, which just overall can be exhausting to really work out on their own and could take some help from maybe a securely attached partner or a therapist, because this just needs a little bit more self-awareness in the equation. I think disorganized and avoidant attachment styles can sometimes be mixed up because they seem quite similar to each other. But let me break down kind of the motivations. So we learned last week that avoidantly attached people often distance themselves and avoid romantic relationships, or at least getting too far into one, because they have a desire for independence and don't necessarily trust others. In the case of disorganized people, that could also be the case and one of the parts of the equation, but there's also the added element that they simply feel overwhelmed and unsafe in relationships. And that stems from how their childhood was and how their upbringing was with their parents. It's mimicking those same feelings with the unpredictability aspect, and they just don't want to put themselves through that again, and they flee from a relationship when it's time to get more vulnerable and get deeper into it. Okay, so how to actually heal disorganized attachment and make steps towards a securely attached place is more in depth for this style for a few reasons. One, a lot of the root causes of it is trauma-centered. So there just needs to be more work done on healing that trauma and really getting to the root of it, because it's so easy to push those memories away, especially when it comes to your childhood, when your brain wasn't even fully formed. But I think therapy that focuses on trauma and resolving those wounds, developing better coping habits is really key here, at least as a starting point. I think another aspect that's important is in terms of how the person views their parents and then themselves. So it's kind of shifting the blame off of yourself and saying that you were just a child and it was not something that was in your control, because I feel like it's super important to remind ourselves that, like, we didn't choose the family we were born into, the parents we had. It's kind of just what you were dealt. So taking the blame off of yourself for what happened when you were a child and any trauma that you went through is definitely another aspect to consider and work on, maybe journal about. But I think really at the crux of this is working on your relationship with yourself before navigating romantic relationships, because that has to be number one. Of course, that's not only for this attachment style and is a general motto in life, but it's especially relevant here. So I think that's all I want to go into for disorganized attachment style, because it is the one that I don't know as much as the others. It is the newest addition to the attachment family, so I think research is still even being done on it. And if you're interested in more, then definitely do your own research. But I think it just gave a nice overview of what that style kind of looks like. But I'd love to move on now to what we've been all waiting for, and that is secure attachment. It is the one that I always say we're working towards when I talk about healing your attachment style, because it's kind of the gold star, and usually these people are quite content in their relationships and have very healthy patterns. Okay, so what do parents of securely attached people look like? This is quite different from all of the other parenting styles. Securely attached individuals had very consistent, responsive parents while they were children. So what this means is if a child needed their parent emotionally, physically, they could always rely on them to be there. And not only be there in a way that's loving and nurturing, but to be there every single time. It was consistent, predictable, and that responsiveness from their parents really helped gain a sense of trust and safety in that child's relationship, which then served as a model for their adult relationships. So I think what's so key here and is a theme across all of the attachment styles is responsiveness and consistency. If you had a responsive parent, that means they were paying attention to you. You have to pay attention to your child to know that they are in need and they need you to help them emotionally or physically. Not only that, but your parent knew what to do to help you. And obviously that comes with trial and error. Parenting is a first-time gig for everybody, but it's the fact that you're paying attention and putting in effort that goes a long way with children. And then consistency. So not only was your parent there for you one time, but they were there for you almost every time. Like, looking back on your relationship and your childhood, you can recall more than one time where you could rely on them. And again, that's another aspect of trust, because of course the definition of trust is that it builds up over many instances and times. And if there were a few times where they weren't there for you, that is not going to outshine all of the other hundreds of times they were. So with all of this warmth, nurturing, responsiveness, it allows for the child to have a positive view of themselves and others. And that's just like a great way to start off life, and it carries on with you. So let's talk about what this looks like in romantic relationships and how it's so different from the other styles. Like I mentioned, they have a strong view of themselves, or at least a positive one, when they are growing up. So when they're finally adults, they probably have a strong sense of self-worth, confidence. They know how to regulate their emotions and cope in a healthy way, which then bleeds into their romantic relationships, where they're comfortable with being vulnerable and intimate and forming an attachment with somebody else without being too clingy, too pushy. They're not avoidant. They're not going to run away. They'll express their emotions openly to you. They will communicate. They will express their boundaries, and it's just easy with them. This person can be independent and be their own person in a relationship, which is obviously very important, but at the same time, they're not afraid to be vulnerable and open and actually be a part of the relationship as well. It's like the constant balance of both things, where they know that it's important to be mutually respectful of each other, have boundaries, but also not to an extent where you're not emotionally available. Like, they will be empathetic, supportive, nurturing. They'll totally be cool with you having solo time, hanging out with a friend of the opposite sex without getting jealous, like the typical hallmarks of anxious attachment, but they won't ghost you like avoidantly attached people would. So in a nutshell, obviously securely attached people, they have their shit together in terms of their relationship with their self. They have a great balance of all these different aspects that seem to be on one end or one extreme for the other attachment styles. So how do we get to this place? I know I've spoken about it a little bit across all the other styles, but to really dig deep into it, like, what is so great about this style and how do we get to that point? So the first aspect is definitely the openness and communication and just being honest in relationships. I feel like so many times there's like a game people are playing when they're dating for the first time or talking to somebody. I think if you're securely attached, you will just not be one for games. You will just want to be blunt and say what you want, what you expect out of a relationship, have your boundaries. And I think that openness is not seen as super sexy these days. People like the game. People like to be chased and also ghosted and also like to ghost. It's just like such a part of today's society. And I think we need to undo that mentality and that belief and just go back to being open and straightforward with somebody so that you don't waste their time or yours. And don't be afraid to express what you're feeling, what your thoughts are. I've mentioned this in the other episodes where if you are struggling and you are at the point that you want to run away and dip out of the relationship before you've even started, just express what you're feeling and maybe not ghost the person, because that is what your first instinct would be. But if you really want to work past it, you have to change your ways. Not only do you have to communicate what you're feeling and thinking, but you also have to be an active listener and be empathetic towards the other person. Make sure you're not tuning out and in your own little bubble. Actually pay attention to what your partner is telling you, their concerns, validate them, and really be there. Be present. It's so easy for us to just not be present when someone's talking to us. And I know this seems so rudimentary and basic, but sometimes we just need to be reminded that when someone's talking to us, maybe don't be on your phone or not really looking at them. You just want to give somebody your undivided attention so that they know you're being responsive. Responsiveness is one of the most key pillars of a healthy relationship. Next is building trust. Trust is so important and it builds up over time. You have to be consistent and reliable. Just like I was talking about securely attached individuals like their parents, they were not just responsive, but they were always there, or at least 90% of the time they were there. So that's how you want to be in your relationships as well. You want to be there consistently. You want to be that person they can rely on and finally trust to open up to and be vulnerable with. I think this next one is quite difficult for most people, understandably, but it's just being vulnerable and not being afraid to share parts of you that maybe you haven't shared with anybody before, that you might be ashamed about, or you simply don't think it's important enough to share. Like, trust me, it is. And moving past those mental blocks and self-limiting beliefs that tell you they don't care or you're not good enough, it's really just barriers in your way. So think about how much closer it brings you to somebody when you know something vulnerable about them and they're just open with you and they're their truest raw selves. And if you do that in a romantic relationship, it's going to be so helpful. And again, it's gonna build trust because that person realizes that you trust them enough to share something vulnerable about you. Okay, the last one for securely attached individuals and moving towards that is to take care of yourself and be your own person, because that's how you're going to show up in a relationship. So have that time to take care of your emotional well-being and do things that help your physical health, your mental health, because that's how you're going to be your best self in a relationship. But you also want to prioritize that independence, that being your own person without being too much of your own person where it seems like you're not even in a relationship anymore. And this is the basic stuff like journaling, working out, eating well, just like the basic things where you're still taking care of yourself to show up for your relationship. And I think that's it for today's episode. I wanted to combine those two because they were a bit shorter, but I'm glad we ended off with secure attachment, and hopefully that gave you a better idea of what it is to work towards and how balanced that style is, and also that it's possible to get there. Like, your attachment style isn't fixed. It can change throughout your life. It will take more work because our early experiences are so deeply rooted in us. Obviously, it's going to take some work and some time, but really take this information with you and just not only be aware of yourself, but be aware of who you're dating, who you're with, and what signs they're showing, because I feel like it's so easy to blame yourself for the way somebody else is acting. But a huge part of this theory and these styles is that it takes the blame off of you, and it's really rooted in someone's past, which they might not even be aware of. Obviously, not everybody is aware of attachment styles, and when I was learning it for the first time, it was a huge wake-up moment. So shift the blame off of you if a relationship doesn't work out, and if there's just aspects of another individual that really aren't working for you. And if you want to go deeper, there is an adult attachment scale, which you can look up and can use it if you want. I'm not telling you to like self-diagnose yourself, but this isn't a diagnosis. It's just assessing how you act in relationships. That's all. It's good to be aware of, and do with this information what you will. That's all I have for today. Hope you enjoyed this series. Hope you had a wonderful month of February. I'm excited for next month, and I'm so excited for spring. Like, Toronto usually only gets maybe 2 weeks of spring, but it is the best time. And then by then, it's basically summer. So that's all I'm telling myself. And I think we're almost at the next daylight savings. Like, is it in March? I think it's in March. It might be in April. Kind of want to look that up right now because I need to know. It is March 10th. That is so soon. So we are going to be having earlier days very soon, which is just the most exciting thing ever. It's literally in 2 weeks. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Okay, that is all I have. And I will talk to you next week. If you enjoyed this episode or the podcast in general, make sure to rate it 5 stars, leave a review, post it on your story and tag me. And yeah, any support helps so much, and I'm so grateful for you. And that's it. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.